several years ago, it might have made sense. You saw a lot of people investing in training software developers. A lot of these technology boot camps that were out there were very popular. And we're now seeing that as an area where AI is doing a lot of the work that humans have historically been responsible for. And so the professions that looked like they were in demand 5 or 10 years ago are not necessarily the same. And training providers have a responsibility to the learners and the people that they're serving to kind of keep up and stay ahead of those shifts in the market.
Zach Heller, you're the VP of Product at Penn Foster, an online education provider in the New York City metropolitan area. And there you've got over 7,000 partnerships with employers and educators. Zach, it's great to have you on the HR Future Live podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Now, you talk about all these partnerships that you have with employers. What are you hearing from employers that you're working with? What's on the grapevine, so to speak?
Yeah. The big thing that we're hearing from employers across industries is just how the nature of work is changing. You know, with the introduction of AI and related technologies, the types of roles that a lot of employers are hiring for are changing. And the skills that they are hiring for are different than they were 5 or 10 years ago. And so,
Like what, Zach? What is it? What's changed?
yeah. So I think a lot of people have seen headlines around the kind of office jobs, what traditionally we would call white collar jobs, being impacted in certain industries where some of these technologies like ChatGPT and Claude can do some of the work that humans have traditionally done. And so skills like human judgment and physical dexterity, hands-on work, those are going to continue to be in demand. And if anything, we see the demand for those skills rising as this technology starts to replace or augment some of the traditional office work that we've seen.
And you're talking about hiring. Where's hiring demand going then, in the light of
Yeah.
these developments you're talking about?
Yeah, well, we see hiring demand strongest in fields where there's still a lot of hands-on work and interpersonal relationships. You know, at Penn Foster, we are investing in career training in fields in the healthcare industry, as an example. So professions like medical assistants and phlebotomists and surgical technicians, these are roles that will continue to require a level of human-to-human interaction, trust and judgment. And those are things that we see continuing to be resilient in an age where AI is kind of replacing or taking over certain skills.
Now, you talk about that resilience. What jobs are less vulnerable to AI and why?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think a lot of people are asking that question at the moment too. We know that AI has developed rapidly and it's changing jobs in a way that can be scary to a lot of people. So what we try to do is work directly with employers to take that information and apply it into our program so that we can be sure we're preparing people for jobs that are going to be a little bit more protected in the time to come. Like I said before, a lot of those are roles where you're working with your hands. In addition to healthcare, that includes a lot of skilled trades professions, what we've traditionally considered blue collar work, jobs that don't necessarily require a 4-year degree, but do require a set of skills and typically industry credentials in order to be the right candidate, to meet demand in the moment.
Now, when we talk about training, how's training evolving?
Yeah, and this is the question that we're asking ourselves at the moment a lot. And talking to others that are in the industry, the real answer is we're working directly with employers to understand how those jobs are evolving and trying to close the feedback loop back to our programs. So the curricula needs to evolve as quickly as these professions are evolving. And so, the best thing that we can do is evolve how quickly we're making changes to programs and decisions that we're making about what programs to continue to offer. Several years ago, it might have made sense. You saw a lot of people investing in training software developers. A lot of these technology boot camps that were out there were very popular. And we're now seeing that as an area where AI is doing a lot of the work that humans have historically been responsible for. And so the professions that looked like they were in demand 5 or 10 years ago are not necessarily the same. And training providers have a responsibility to the learners and the people that they're serving to kind of keep up and stay ahead of those shifts in the market.
And Zach, what are you seeing in terms of the way people are learning? Is that changing? Is that evolving?
Absolutely. I think, especially as you think about the types of hands-on professions that are going to be somewhat more protected in the years ahead as AI evolves, you can't do that entirely at a distance or online. And so providers like Penn Foster, which our legacy is as a distance provider, online training, one of the big reasons we're working with employers today is we need to partner with industry to create connections for hands-on skill development, right? Somebody who is training to be an HVAC technician, let's say, they need the online didactic training that we provide where they can gain the knowledge and the skills and understand sort of what that job looks like. But you're not going to trust somebody to work on your, air conditioning when it lets you down if they've never actually worked on an air conditioning unit before. And so getting those hands-on skills and integrating them into a program is critical and only becoming more important as time goes on, where we see a lot of these jobs continuing to be in demand.
Just give me a sense of the types of programs that you're running.
For Penn Foster, some of the most popular programs that we offer today are in sort of the allied healthcare space. I mentioned medical assistants earlier, dental assistants, some of the like phlebotomist type roles. Those are areas where we see a lot of interest from prospective workers as well as employers who really can't hire quickly enough. We do a lot of work to train people in veterinary health. So one of our largest career programs is a veterinary technician degree. That is an area, again, where the demand for care is higher than it's ever been. And so when you talk to veterinarians in these clinics and hospital networks across the country, they can't have enough credentialed vet techs. And so that's why we see really strong demand in that area as well.
To go back to the whole way that people are learning, is there any particular thing that you've seen happening that you've had to unlearn about the way people learn?
Yeah, it's interesting. I started at Penn Foster Group about 7 years ago. And at the time, a lot of our programs were built in a way where learning felt very static, is the way I would describe it. People who have taken an online course before might know what I'm talking about when I say it was a lot of reading, and then answering multiple choice quizzes or tests. And that is, it's a good way to learn if what you're trying to do is memorize facts so that you can pass a test. It's not a good way to learn if what you're trying to do is develop new skills. And so the way our training is evolving now, And I think this is consistent with what you'll see across the industry is a lot more opportunity to practice and apply that knowledge as you're developing it. So you still might read a passage, but then you are introduced to a simulation or a scenario where you have to actually figure it out, applying the knowledge that you've just learned. And so you can develop those skills online, and technology is making that a whole lot easier. But you have to invest in really making the learning experience more than just knowledge acquisition. It's got to be practice as you go and learn by doing instead of just learn by reading.
How does one do that online?
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned, some of the technology that we're using is evolving as we speak. And AI, frankly, makes that a lot easier to deliver at scale. You know, Penn Foster serves somewhere around 200,000 learners a year across all of our programs. And so we need to create programs that are interactive and provide people feedback as they go without relying on, you know, a human being to support every single student. That just doesn't scale for us. And so we use scenario-based assessments as an example, where a medical assistant can learn sort of how to interact with a patient and how to take vitals from that patient while they're kind of going through an online program and they're interacting with certain elements on the page and answering questions as they go to say, you know, how would you solve this problem? What would you do next? And they're getting that feedback in real time so that they're sort of getting that opportunity to practice and grow.
And completion rates, that's always a challenge. What are you seeing in terms of that?
Yeah, certainly is. And as we evolve our business and the way that we're training people, our focus is on growing completion rates. And it's not just getting to the end of the program, to be fair. It is making sure that we're opening the door to opportunity. And typically for our learners, that is a new job or advancement within their career. And so our completion rates have historically not been what we want them to be. Our goal now is, we set a North Star by 2029. We want to have 150,000 completers who are getting that kind of economic opportunity that we promised them. And so completion rates is a metric that we continue to work on and improve over time.
And Zach, are you seeing any trends that are influencing completion rates, for the good or for the bad?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we know from the work that we've done over the last couple of years is that really investing in the learning experience itself is the biggest lever that we can pull to improve completion rate. One of the things that we've done is deployed this new learning model. I won't go too deep into this, but we have an acronym for it. It's LADS, and that stands for learner-centric, active, authentic, differentiated, and skills-based. And when you put it all together, what it really means is, again, focusing on who we're serving and where they're coming from. They have a certain set of skills or life experiences that they may not be aware lends itself to a new career. And so it's our job to show them and help them apply those skills as they're learning about this new profession. And as we've rebuilt some of our programs over the last few years, we've seen really strong increases in engagement, learners who are actually excited to get into their programs and learn and feel like they're actually developing those skills. And that leads to higher completion rates over time.
Okay. And we were talking about AI earlier on. Is AI genuinely improving learning outcomes?
It is if you're using it right. And I will say that this is an area that is evolving rapidly. And so everyone is experimenting and sort of learning in real time here. One of the things that I saw early on, 3 years ago when ChatGPT first came out and everybody was talking about how it was going to impact learning, there was an initial fear, I would say, and resistance on the part of educators and the industry, because I think people saw this as an existential threat, something that was going to help students cheat their way through programs. And the primary goal or response in the first year or so was, how do we prevent people from using this technology? And that has flipped completely. Now, when you talk to educators, it is, how do we embed this technology into the training programs and give our students the opportunity to learn how to use it effectively? Because the reality is, when they graduate our programs and get into the labor force, they're going to be interacting with this technology. And the best thing that we can do, what we owe those students, is make sure that they have a baseline understanding of how it's being used and how they can leverage it to be better at whatever that profession might be.
We're moving from a very much of a one size fits all world to a highly personalized world. Is personalization playing a role in the learning experience?
Yes, absolutely. And that's where that differentiated comes in when I mentioned what our learning model is. When we think about personalization, historically that has meant more like bells and whistles, I would say, like inserting a person's name or profession into an email. That's how a lot of people thought about personalization. What we know is, for good learning, it needs to adapt to the individual. And so we use this term adaptive learning, which really means meeting learners where they are. If you have a certain skill level or proficiency level, we're going to match the training to that level. And our goal is to grow you over time, but not everybody moves at the same pace, and not everybody comes in at the same level. And so that's where personalization can really be impactful from a learning science perspective, is it is meeting the learner where they are and sort of reacting to that learner as they progress.
Okay. If you were kind of to play dad, so to speak, to training companies, what are you seeing them getting wrong that you'd like to alert them to that they need to become aware of and address
Yeah,
about training?
exactly. So I'm going to start a little broader and then work in from there, because I think we're starting to see this change. But for a long time, as a society, we have essentially said there's one correct pathway to a successful, middle class job, and that is go to university, get a 4-year degree, and you're going to be fine. And the reality is, we're now seeing college graduates who are entering a labor market that is maybe more challenging than they've ever seen before. And the unemployment rate for new grads is actually higher than the unemployment rate for people who've been in the industry for a while. And that's because we're not necessarily doing a good job of explaining to people that there are other pathways to good jobs. And so I'm not saying don't get a 4-year degree. I'm saying we need to make sure that people are aware of the alternatives that are out there. And so Penn Foster is one of those companies that's providing training that is outside of the typical degree system. I think what training providers in general get wrong still is that they assume, once they build a program and launch a program, that work is done. And the reality is, it's not. Because of the speed at which this technology is evolving, we know that the jobs that exist today are going to look different in a few years. And so that feedback loop I mentioned before between training providers and employers, It couldn't be more important because employers see it first. They know how this technology is changing what they need, and they're making workforce decisions based on it every day. The quicker that we can learn from them and take those learnings back and update our programs or build new programs, the more effective we can prepare people for those jobs. So that's what I would say. I think training providers have a responsibility to make sure that they are keeping their programs up to date with the roles that exist.
Talking about keeping those programs up to date, would you say that we're overestimating or underestimating the pace of change in terms of learning and training?
I think today it depends on who you're talking to a little bit. And, my predictions about this technology and how it will evolve are as good as anybody else's, which is to say, not very good. I don't think we can, forecast the future with any sense of certainty. But I do think most people that are training workers for jobs and the workers themselves are probably underestimating the pace of change today. Because when you talk to certainly the people that are working on these AI tools and systems and the employers who are getting a chance to experiment with these technologies first, they are saying pretty loudly that jobs and skills are changing. It doesn't mean that full jobs are being replaced. I think that's the assumption a lot of people leap to when they hear that. But it does mean that many of these professions are incorporating technology. And so the jobs themselves are changing. We still need people, but we need people with the right skills to do the jobs that will exist tomorrow.
Talking about the future, if you were to look ahead for the next 5 or 10 years, what would you say would look about learning today? What would you say in 5 years' time or so would look completely outdated?
Certainly, if we're still doing any kind of static learning, that will feel outdated. I think that the best educators and training organizations are going to start incorporating these tools to make the experience for learners much more interactive. You'll see a lot more real-time feedback and evaluation. You'll see a lot more opportunities to interact with learning materials in new ways that would be hard to predict even now. But, augmented reality and virtual reality are certainly making it possible to get hands-on practice from home or anywhere in the world. And so I think you're going to see, especially workforce training programs evolve to deliver more of that hands-on experience and make sure that learners are graduating into the industry, having already experienced what it's like to be on the job.
One of the things that puzzles me about training is that very often people go through a learning experience, but it doesn't change their behavior. They stay the same. So they know something, but it hasn't changed anything. Have you got any suggestions as to how one could have effect that change of behavior so that they go through a process and their behavior is different as a result of it?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that it has to do with incentives and assessment. So for us, the way that we are motivating learners as they move through the program has changed and will continue to change. Making the acquisition of new skills and the mastery of those skills very relevant to the job that somebody wants because there is that intrinsic motivation and we need to harness that and sort of build off of it. A learner wants to be able to do the job. When they come to us, they don't have the skills necessary, but we can't then forget about that as we move them through the program. We need to continue to remind them, what is this job going to look like? How is it going to change your life? Behaviors change when people see that the thing that they want is only attainable with that change. So that's the incentive, that's the drive, and we need to harness that as educators. And then I think I mentioned assessment. Getting away from the multiple choice exams and the standardized test and the five paragraph essays that have traditionally been the dominant form of assessment, and getting really into how do we understand where people are at on this skill development curve. And so the assessments need to be actually testing whether they're learning the things that they're learning and can apply them to the world of work. And I think when learners see that and experience that, they know that the training is aligned to where they want to go. And it's an encouragement, it's another motivator.
Okay. Zach, time for some rapid fire questions.
All
Okay.
right, let's go.
Right. One word to describe the future of education.
Dynamic.
Okay. Degree or skills?
Ooh, skills. Even in the world of some people should continue to go to school and get their 4-year degree, those degrees need to be aligned to skills because that's what employers are hiring for.
Good point. Okay. Scale or depth?
Scale.
Okay. AI optimist or AI skeptic?
AI optimist. I think that we as a society owe it to people to make sure that we are putting the right guardrails into effect and making sure that we're preparing people for how to leverage this technology to be the best version of themselves. And I think I have faith in humanity that we'll figure out how to do that.
Very nice. Okay. And last one, a most underrated metric in learning.
Ooh, most underrated metric in learning is skill mastery. I think we're still figuring out how to assess at the skill level. That's been the work that we've been investing in at Penn Foster. I think, too many people are still looking at grades and completion rates as their primary metrics. And really, at the end of the day, it's about what can learners do when they finish your program that they couldn't do at the beginning. And that has to do with the skills that they're developing.
Okay. We're coming into land now, and I always pose the same thing to everybody I chat to, and that's this. Experts have things on their hearts that they feel people need to hear from them, and they very often don't get a chance to share those things. What's on your heart that you need to share that we haven't necessarily spoken about?
Yeah, I may repeat myself a little bit here, but I want to go a little deeper because I think for the last 30 or so years, as a society, we have set the wrong expectations for people. We have talked a lot about this college for all mindset, and we've given our young people and students across the country the impression that the only way to get a good life and family sustaining job is by getting a 4-year degree. And that's simply not true. And it's led to some issues in the economy and in the labor force right now, where, just to take one example, in the skilled trades, we have an aging workforce that is retiring at rates that are far higher than new talent is coming into the marketplace. And it primarily has to do with a lack of awareness of people that this is a job that can lead to that kind of middle class wage. And so I think if more people were aware of these alternative pathways to a 4-year degree that exist, there would be more demand for them. I see that starting to change. I think it needs to change much more rapidly if we're going to, match people with the jobs that are going to continue to be in demand as technology evolves.
Zach, it's been a pleasure chatting to you. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your time with us. Thank you.
Yeah, the pleasure's all mine, Alan. Thanks for having me.